You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio News. Good morning. I'm Marianne Combs. Hundreds of thousands of youth and adults took to the streets Saturday in what was billed as the March for Our Lives. The march was both to demand stricter gun control laws and honor the 17 students and faculty members killed last month at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Their demand for tighter restrictions on guns runs counter to President Trump's rhetoric. He has supported the National Rifle Association's position to arm teachers in order to protect students. A recent Gallup poll found that nearly three-fourths of U.S. teachers do not want to carry guns in school and that they overwhelmingly favor gun control. Here in Minnesota, Governor Dayton has proposed a $21 million school safety plan. It focuses on school building security, mental health services, and assistance for expelled students. So what do teachers need to keep their students safe? And are we asking too much of teachers to be the front line of school safety on top of their educational duties? Today I'm joined in studio by three guests. Denise Speck is president of the Teachers Union Education Minnesota. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Maria Lay. She teaches third grade students at Central Park Elementary in Roseville. Good morning, Maria. Thanks for being here with us.
Good morning.
And we're joined by Abdul Wright. Wright is a language arts teacher at Best Academy and was named Minnesota Teacher of the Year in 2016. Abdul, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for all of you for being here. We'd also love to hear from you. If you're a teacher, a student, or a parent, what changes do you think need to be made to improve school safety? Who should bear the responsibility for student safety, teachers or administrators? Give us a call with your comment or question. First off, to you, all of you, but you know, we can start where whoever wants to start first. What do you think of this weekend's march and the students out on the streets this weekend? What initial response?
I thought it was beyond powerful. It was just so many young people. Prior to watching the march and kind of really getting in tune with it over the weekend, I didn't really know what was going to come from it. But to see how these young people organized and how they didn't just talk about, you know, one incident. They talked about gun violence in America. They talked about gun violence in inner cities. They talked about being a voice for those who lack one. And I thought that that was the comprehensiveness in their message was just so beyond powerful. And it was just impactful.
You felt it was much more inclusive than maybe you expected it to be.
Definitely more inclusive than I expected it to be. You hear them talking about the young girl, I think it was 11-year-old Naomi. Mm-hmm. How she organized the walkout and at her elementary school, but then she stayed out there 1 minute longer for the young African-American girl who had lost her life due to gun violence. And I just thought for an 11-year-old to have that sense of compassion, it's the most beautiful thing that can come from this negativity and from all of this.
Maria, what about you? What do you think?
It was just an amazing moment to realize that to be a proud teacher, seeing so many young people choosing to use their pain and their anger in a very positive way. It's not the way that we as adults always think to do first. And for so often, I always think I'm teaching tomorrow's leaders. And I have to take that back because, I mean, they are our leaders today. Mm-hmm. For them to already
You're teaching
step out
today's
and do
leaders.
That. Yes, I'm teaching today's leaders. And it's just such an amazing thing to see people from all backgrounds, students from all ages. And they're so aware of what is happening in our communities and in our nation now.
Mm. Denise, what about you?
So I was invited to attend one of these student walkouts a couple weeks ago in Moorhead at Moorhead High School. And then I attended the rally this Saturday at the Capitol Steps here in St. Paul. And I just have to say that at both events, I was really inspired. I mean, here are students who are using their voices but are also being recognized as leaders. For one of the first times ever, people are listening and people are paying attention. I just hope that those that were listening on Saturday do something now.
Mm-hmm. You know, This was a student-led protest. Are there places where students and teachers differ in terms of what they want to change or how they want to change it? I mean, you're watching the students out there lead the movement, but are there certain things where you think, oh, as a teacher, I don't know about that part, or is this a united front?
I think for teachers, and I can only speak for myself, they don't have to be politically correct. They can be that much more courageous. Like, the bigger the platform, the more unapologetically they have the opportunity to be without worrying about, am I rubbing this group of people the wrong way? Or am I rubbing this group of people the wrong way? As adults, you kind of get, as much as we try to stay out of that, like, politically correct culture, it becomes embedded into our adult society. But as young people, they just so fearless. You know, I think that that's the biggest difference. They're so much more fearless than myself, even. And they use their voice so much more unapologetically than I have been using mine. And there's no, I'm sorry, there's no sense of like, well, we don't want to rub you. No, it's like, look, these are our issues. You need to understand that you will do something about our issues or get out the way.
This hour, we're talking to teachers about safe schools and the responsibilities put on teachers in times of crisis. If you'd like to call us with your question or comment, you can reach us at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828. That's 1-800-242-2828. So, how have your schools approached the issue of gun violence? Is that something that's been brought up in your schools, Maria?
Well, the students are actually the ones that are already talking about it. And I, as a teacher, I'm there to listen.
And you're a third grade teacher.
I'm a third grade teacher. And but I also am involved with a lot of other activities at my school where I'm talking to students as young as kindergarten. Mm. And March 14th was the first initial national school walkout that was organized by the Women's March. And we had students as young as first grade out there. We had 92 students that worked to get parent permission slips over spring break, bring it back that following Monday after break, and we're ready to say, I want to stand up for what I believe in. And out there, I had the opportunity to actually listen to some of the students, and from first grade through sixth grade, they knew exactly what was going on when it comes to gun violence in not only in school, but in the communities. But at the same time, I just saw how much respect they had for students who chose to stay inside for whatever reason, whether or not they wanted to show what they believed in a different way by either writing letters or calling representatives, whatever they did. They were very respectful going in and out of the classroom, and they were very aware of what's happening. And for me, it's a bittersweet moment because mm-hmm. you see students using what they learn actively, what they teach them, what we teach them every single day. But it's really sad under the circumstances. But it empowers me as an adult to see that they are not afraid. Just as Abdul said, they're fearless. They're ready. And they will tell us exactly what they need.
Mm. But still, are the schools in terms, I know some schools are conducting active shooter drills or they're having conversations mm-hmm. with their staff and students about how to handle a crisis. Is that something that is going on in schools, Denise?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I started teaching in 1989, and the scariest thing we had to practice was a fire drill or how to evacuate a bus in case of, a crisis. Now, I mean, it breaks my heart, but it is very scary that we now, this is a yearly routine, practicing lockdowns. I heard students at the rally on Saturday that said that I can't believe that we are to a point that I scan a classroom, every room that I'm in, to figure out am I going to hide behind? Or what am I going to throw? Or what is my quickest exit? That isn't what kids should be worried about. I guess adults should be worried about that, and they should be doing something. But that's where we're at.
Mm. What do you think of the fact that there are schools that have armed their teachers and are training them how to respond in an active shooter situation? As teachers, how do you feel about that?
To each his own. Nah, like, seriously, But I don't think, in my opinion, it doesn't make anything better, because I want to align that with something like with values, right? You want to align decisions and action, or decisions and things that we say with our values. For me, I value life. And if you value life, you don't want to put young people or adults in a position where they have to take a life. Was listening to this young man talk. He is just gang. He was a former gang member. He said, "I knew that if I didn't step away from this violence, I was gonna kill somebody or I was gonna be killed. But he said, either way, I was dead." And like for me, we putting teachers in a position where they could potentially have to take the life of somebody else, and they gotta live with that. You know, like they're police officers, they're people in military who still struggle with that. They're doctors who struggle with not being able to save a life. And to put somebody like a teacher in a position where all you wanna do is serve and instill and empower and build up young people, and say, "Oh, I gotta kill this young man." You know, like that's crazy to me that we are at a point where we just wanna, you know, use hate to drive out hate.
Mm. Denise?
We've done some polling, some surveying here in Minnesota, and I know that nationally there has been extensive surveying around this topic. And overall, most educators do not believe that bringing more guns into a school is the solution. And there are all sorts of reasons why, but a few are, number one, when you think about the relationship that happens between an educator and a student, teaching is very human, mm-hmm. and it depends on trusting relationships. And I believe that when you bring in a firearm and when students know that there is one in close proximity, it can affect the relationship. Number two, we do not have secure spots in most of our classrooms for anything like this. Now, I'm a second grade teacher, and my students' hands were everywhere. They were curious. I would really not feel good about entering into a time where I need to bring a firearm in an unsecure place. But the other thing is training. I mean, my goodness, we don't even get trained for our day jobs, mm-hmm. let alone being trained to know what to do in a stressful situation. What is that going to look like? And lastly, if we are in a situation that is very unfortunate where there is a weapon on campus or an active shooter, look, the local law enforcement's job is to know where all the guns are, and they are going to be looking for who has the gun. Is that going to be Abdul? Is that going to be Maria? And I think Abdul brought up a very good point. When we are faced with this and a terrible situation like this, and Abdul's got the gun and he's facing one of his students, I mean, what a decision to have to make for an educator. Do I shoot my student? Now, I'll end with this. I know every educator has had to look in the mirror and decide, am I going to take a bullet if I had to for my children, for my kids, for my students? That's a decision that everybody has made already, but you compound having to have a gun? Wow.
Hmm. And to your point, I think another big thing is it's a mindset. It's like if I feel a need to carry a gun, you know, like it's like if you dress up real fancy, you know, you put on your tuxedo, you put on some real fly, you have a different mindset. You carry yourself a certain way. You know, your posture is a little bit better. Imagine carrying a gun, like. Your mindset is very different than someone who does not. You are like looking for a threat, or you are aware that a threat could exist. When you walk into a classroom, the only threat that a teacher should have to worry about is whether or not my students understand, or if my students are growing, or if I'm helping them figure out how ways to solve their problems with one another, not the threat of taking a life or someone trying to take their life. Like, mm-hmm. Teachers are human beings. Like you said, it's a relationship thing. Teachers are human beings. Human beings who have families or people that they love and care for. Like, it's so messed up that we're putting educators in a position where they could potentially not come home to their children or not pick their own children up from school. Like, that's so traumatic. That's such a traumatic experience. It's a traumatic experience to be exposed to seeing a gun. My dad, and I know I'm... I watched my uncle get killed in front of me when he was only 16 years old. Mm. He was a victim of gun violence. Mm. I remember when I was a young man, my dad, I never forget this. He had two guns. He had a shotgun and he had a handgun. And he brought me in a room when I was like 9, 10, and he told me, here are the guns, this is where they are, and I want you to know in case we have an intruder. For him, that was just, you know, telling me something. But for me, that was so, that lasted, that stuck in my head, because I don't want to see no gun. I don't want to think about having to use no gun or somebody potentially using a gun. I just want to watch cartoons.
Of course.
So just the experience of having a gun in any environment is one that increases the trauma. It increases, you know, your sense of awareness and self-defense when you shouldn't have to, man. You shouldn't have to.
Well, and you bring up a really good point, Abdul. If you think about students nowadays, I mean, there's so much research and polls that show that the mental health of our students has risen. And yes. Just think about how anxiety-inducing it is for a student or a teacher or anybody to know that there are firearms in a school. I just think about the simplest things that I tell my students with when I'm talking to them about solving conflict. And the first thing I ask them, okay, are you being helpful or hurtful? You know, and I would ask the same question. Would arming teachers be helpful or hurtful? And in my opinion, I feel it would be more hurtful. Whether or not it's a matter of creating more anxiety and trauma in my students or myself or my colleagues, or if it's, again, making that decision when we're facing a young person who is somebody's student out there.
Man.
It's something that I just can't imagine. And really what we really need to think about is what do our students really need and what do teachers really need? Because I know when I went into the profession, I did not ever expect that I would need to consider whether or not I'd lay down my life. And for students to come and ask me, it's like, Ms. Lay, would you risk your life for me? And of course, without thinking, I will say yes, I would lay my life down for anybody. That's why I went into the profession. But it's unfortunate that I need to be forced to then put my family at risk of, because of what she chose, my daughter, my sister, my mom chose, I could lose her.
Yeah. We're talking this hour about school safety, guns in schools, and the responsibility is put on teachers to maintain school safety and a safe educational environment. If you're a teacher, a student, or a parent, what changes do you think need to be made to improve school safety? Who should bear responsibility for that student safety? You can give us a call at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. Or toll-free 1-800-242-2828. Again, that's toll-free 1-800-242-2828. Shantae in Minneapolis writes, safety in the schools is a community issue. Mm-hmm. People need to watch out for each other. The state also plays a huge part, and says we also need metal detectors in schools. Let's address that first part. Safety in schools is a community issue. Abdul, you responded strongly to that. How do you see that playing out? How does that work?
That's really what I was just about to say. When I hear schools, I hear community, and you talked about the responsibility. Responsibility falls on the community, but you can get a lot about what a school environment will be like based on the community. Like, one thing that I wish that I had the opportunity to do is just bring people to the community, just bring them to the local parks, bring them to the bus stops where young people have to, you know, ride the buses, because you can get a good idea, the sense of belief or the mindset that young people in these communities have. One of the young speakers at the March for Our Lives said that no young person should have to walk into a school and fear for their own safety. I 1,000% agree with that. That's the last thing you should have to do. And at the same time, no young person exiting out of a school should have to fear for their life or their own safety while walking home or catching the city bus home from school or the school bus home. You shouldn't even have to see that. 2 years ago, our students saw a dead body on the school bus. They saw a dead body on the street. They saw a dead body right there on the street. I'm talking about kindergartens, first, second, third, all the way up to eighth grade. That's in the community. It's a community problem, because it's a social emotional well-being problem. And then it deals with the larger demographics of people that we have in concentrated communities where you see higher amounts of gun violence. You know, I don't have the statistics right in front of me, but I can guarantee you that more gun violence happens more often in urban areas and in districts or communities where, you know, the poverty line is a lot lower, or it's just so crazy to me. And but where are the resources at? And I'm not just talking about politicians. I'm not just putting it all on them. I'm not putting it all on these leaders. I'm talking about people who just choose to come to the community to volunteer. That's the support. Those are resources. What about these experts who have experience in dealing with young people with trauma or helping, you know, couples revisit their family situation? Where are the opportunities for free therapy for these people? Where are opportunities for young people to kind of voice and converse with one another and talk about their emotions? There are young people every day who their first thing, because they can't talk, they're ready to fight or they're ready to get aggressive. So when you get from when you quote unquote graduate from getting ready to fight to getting ready to pick up a gun, it happens that fast for young people.
Mm. So when you talk about talking about emotions and learning to talk about emotions, is that something that the school can be doing that's helping the community as a whole in terms of teaching these kids how to voice their emotions, how to put words to their emotions, how to acknowledge rather than going straight to fighting? Or, I mean, what, it's not a chicken and the egg question, it's a both and, I guess, yeah. But you know, what happens at the community level, that what needs to happen at the community level and what needs to happen at the school level to help develop the safety
platform?
Go ahead.
Platform at the community level. I think the community's job is to create these opportunities for this dialogue to exist, to create safe spaces for this dialogue to exist so that we can hear the varying opinions on these different issues. And you need experts who are experts in the technical sense, but then also experts in experience. So you need both of them at the table, and you just need people who want to be a part of the solution. And then what happens from these community discussions, you need these breakout discussions that take place in the school to actually turn into action. And so then you have more people who are on these singular messages who are speaking up and for young people to create better communities, which in turn create better schools. Because then once we as a community get a similar message and then we see that translate into the schools, then now we bring it to our representatives and we say, look, collectively in our district, this is our focus. This is what we believe can bring about change based on the varying opinions that we've had in this discussion. And this is what we want y'all to push for us. And then we hold them accountable. We get familiar with who our representatives are. We get familiar with, you know, how this all takes place in regards to changing policy. And then we just make sure that we hold, you know, we hold them accountable.
Mm. Maria?
I would also agree that it really needs, I think the community needs to step up because, I mean, we hear so often about the school to prison pipeline, but I believe that it's a community prison pipeline. I mean, Abdul gave really great examples of how the community really influences the culture of a school.
But some communities have far more resources than others.
Absolutely. And if we think about how much resources really need to be filtered into a school, like as a teacher, I have to wear so many hats. I have to be a teacher. I have to be a social worker. I have to be a counselor. I have to be a pastor in some ways. And I don't necessarily have the training necessary to give my students what they need. So really what we need to think about is what resources can we give to equip schools and equip the community so that they can better serve our students. We need to look at whether or not there are students have access to therapists, whether or not it's a school-based or if it's access to it in the community. Even just looking at just who's in the building in the first place. Do teachers have the ability to reach all of those students that they have in their classroom? I know it, for me, I had 32 third graders last year, and as much as I wanted to build relationships with all of them, it was really hard with all of the things that I needed to do and make sure, do they have exactly what they need? What I could be missing a student that could have been homeless and sleeping in their car, and all I would know is that they were tired, and they may not have the words to always tell me, but if I knew things from what was going on in the community, there would be a lot more communication that would happen if we all took the collective responsibility to making sure that our students are safe.
Mm. We're talking this hour about safety in schools and the role of teachers and the burdens that they bear in terms of maintaining safety while doing their own jobs. And we're talking with President Denise Speck, who's the president of Education Minnesota. That's a teachers union. Abdul Wright, who teaches at Best Academy and was former Teacher of the Year. And Maria Lay, who's a third grade teacher in Roseville. We'll also are taking your calls. You can reach us at 651-227-6000 or toll free at 1-800-242-2828. We'd love to hear your thoughts as a student, a parent, or a teacher about what you think needs to be done to improve school safety and safety of students. We've got Mike on the line in Shoreview. Mike, welcome to the conversation. Mike, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I am. Hello. Hi.
Hello.
I'm saddened, like everybody else, about the need for this conversation. But what strikes me is that why are we talking about making schools safe? We should be talking about making society not want or not have young men want to pick a gun up and go into school. I mean, I think it's the wrong end of the stick. I think making schools safe is the wrong thing to do, in a sense of, I don't want to make them prisons or, you know, put up barbed wire or what have we. And arming teachers is definitely not the thing to do. I mean, it's one of the people on the panel mentioned getting out in the community, and I think it's just society. We've lost the plot. You know, it's wrong. I can't think of another country in the world where teachers would be sitting around talking about how to make schools safe from a gunman. It's only here. It's only here. You know, that's just my comment. I'm saddened. You know, I almost want to cry when I think about this. I went to school to learn a long, long time ago, but I never thought about, you know, not being safe at school.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, thanks so much for your call. Really appreciate it. Yeah, Mike seems to be tapping into what we were saying earlier about community and that this is a community issue. And the idea that is trying to address this at the school level, is that a Band-Aid for an issue that goes much deeper than that?
I don't necessarily think it's a Band-Aid. I think it just happened to be what finally spilled over the cup. We've seen just in this school year alone, my students have seen it happen in Las Vegas. And in past, we've seen it at a movie theater. We've seen it in malls. We see it in the community all the time. And the students are tired of it. It just happened to be the last shooting that finally got everybody to wake up was what happened in Florida. And I think that just what finally got the ripple rolling. But I highly agree. It's something that we really need to think about, again, with what the community needs to do. And each area, I'm sure, is thinking about what they're doing to make their organization safer. I know if we think about what happened with 9/11, airports started thinking about what they could do to make air travel safety. So I think it's just a natural thing to do is what can you do in your own community or your own organization to make it safe? So that's something that schools are doing. But I also see that it's happening in every other aspect as well.
So Maria, what do you need at your school to do a better job of taking care of your students and making sure that they're safe?
First and foremost, there's so much lack of funding to really put the personnel in the building. Class sizes are so high, and different individuals are asked to do so much more than what they are trained for. If you think about the counselor ratio in Minnesota, we're one of the worst in the nation. We think about who the social workers are, school-based therapy, really thinking about where we can start looking at community, full-service community schools where kids and families can really get what they need.
What about you, Abdul? What do you need to keep your students safe?
Man, that's such a loaded question. What do I need to keep my students safe? Because the reality is I'm trying to keep them safe from a lot of different things and a lot of different systems that are not set up for them to be successful.
Well, and I think the better question is to keep them safer, because, I mean, it's a lot to ask to keep safe, because can we really say that we're safe ourselves?
Mm-hmm. I know for me, like just this past week, I was reading a story about Stephon Clark in Sacramento, the young man who was shot in his own backyard.
On his cell phone.
On his cell phone. Like, what could I have done differently for him? Like, what, you know, you could teach him in the classroom. You could tell him how to carry yourself. You could tell him how to say yes, sir, no, sir, how to be respectful. But at the end of the day, there's just certain things that I cannot keep him safe from. And that's a bias That's an embedded bias that so many people, that we all have. And it's so messed up because there are things to like accept that. There are things that I cannot keep certain. I cannot keep my young people safer. And when I say young people, I'm specifically, and I'm really talking about young African-American people and specifically young Black men of color.
Like, yeah. This is something I've seen debated out there, that this whole talk of arming teachers or putting guns in schools is racially tone deaf.
Because there have been young, the thing is that young people are losing their lives, right? That's the issue. We don't want young people losing their lives. And it's sad and it's hurtful. And it's the most traumatic thing that can go on anywhere is for a young person to lose their life. This is happening every day in Chicago. Up sometimes 10 times a day. You have 4th of July weekends where you just waiting on for Sunday night news or Monday morning news to see what did we set a new record in the amount of fatalities. And if you look at these babies that are being lost, like, it's ridiculous. And I don't want to say that it's racially tone deaf, because I think that I don't want to say it's racially tone deaf, because I think that that's to say that there are people, you know, let's just be frank. There are white people or people who come from better off communities who are like disregarding Black lives. Right. And I know too many great white people, and great in the sense they have a good heart and they see compassion and they have understanding, where that's not what they're doing. Sometimes it's just it's brought to the light. You know, these shootings that happen in these better off communities, those are brought to the light because these type of things don't happen there. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's an issue if it's happening here. You know what I'm saying? Type of mentality. Mm-hmm. Whereas over north, a 15-year-old girl gets shot in the head leaving a party at 9 o'clock in the night. It's on the news for 30 seconds and then we move on. Like, it's what's become acceptable that I have an issue with. It's become accepted for North Minneapolis to have the amount of violence that we have. It's become acceptable for 15, 16-year-old young men to be in juvenile detentional centers or charged as adults for committing crimes of violence. That's become acceptable. And that is the real thing that I have an issue with, because I cannot keep them safe from a system, an entire system. I can't do that. And I don't think anybody, and I think that's the uphill battle that we as educators face. You teach in these communities, and it's not just African-American children. I'm thinking about, you know, refugee children who come from different countries, who fight, who survive civil wars to get here and hope for an opportunity just for somebody to see them as a human being. These young people want to be viewed as human beings who have an opportunity to live a full life. And because of certain systems, because of certain big support groups, that's not happening. Support groups in the sense of the NRA, you know, they bring a lot of money. They have their own. They have it's like an institution that they have, that they're able to push out certain information. And then you look at the young people who come from all of these different communities who are so naive, but naive in a great way, because it makes them that much more fearless or that much more courageous. And they're not. It's not set up for them. It's not set up. Like, what happens now, right? Like, this march just happened. What's happening today? What policy, what discussions are happening in regards to that? Like, I just read something the other day that talked about the new budget. That's going to be the biggest piece of legislation that's going to come out in this year. So then what are these young people doing? Like for me, it's like, what are they doing? What are they doing this for? Are they doing this just so that, you know, you could get a quick picture and have this insincere, not the young people, the politicians who sit in the town halls with the young people to have these discussions. Is that done just to have a photo op, or is that done to bring about some real change? And that's the thing that I'm kind of struggling with. I'm struggling with that. I'm struggling with not knowing where to go from here. I'm struggling with those things. So I can't tell you what other educators or other parents who have to say who are faced with that. They're young parents every day who the kids, they see their kids talking about, I got to take a gun to school. I got to take a gun with me when I leave this house. Like, how does a parent respond to that? How do you respond to that? How would you respond to that if your child said to you, if you had a 14, 15, 16-year-old child that came to you and said, Mom, I need to carry a gun to with me everywhere I go. That's a reality. For a lot of parents, that is a true reality. Now, how do we deal with that?
I'm so glad we're having this conversation today as a follow-up to what happened this weekend. And you brought up a good point about the budget and the fact that there is, you know, Governor Dayton has proposed $21 million for school safety. When you see that, I mean, Denise, when you see that item in the budget, do you think, oh, finally? I mean, does that seem like this is going to help what you in terms of schools and teachers and get you to where you need to be?
I mean, I am really grateful that the governor has put money or has set aside funds in his budget for school safety. And so it's a good start, but it's not enough. And so while I'm very appreciative, and I know that we're in a policy year, not a budget year, you know, maybe that's the first step that we can take here. But here's the frustrating part for most educators. We have been asking, begging for help in our schools to make them safe and welcoming every day, not just on a day when there's an active shooter, that we need the tools and the resources. Our students need the tools and the resources every single day. And that's why we're advocating for more support staff that can help. I mean, I last read that our counseling ratio is at 750 students to one counselor. That the best practice is 250 to one. So I can tell you that we've been advocating for more counselors, social workers, school psychologists, and other support personnel that can help students with their unmet needs. They're coming with a lot of challenges. Maria mentioned class size. We should have enforceable class size ratios across the board so that educators can build strong relationships with their students. I know that there are schools that want school resource officers because that fits the needs for them. I'm not going to argue with that, but they're the ones that are trained to have guns, not me as a teacher. We should have training for restorative practices. We simply have to have better solutions for, again, the needs of all of our students.
And when you talk about restorative practices, give us a sense of what
sure.
that means.
Sure. So Maria and Abdul can be better storytellers on this, but we simply need to have everybody in the school with a mindset of how we work through issues that come up in the classroom. We can't be in the business of kicking kids out and not having a plan. We should be in the business of students staying in school and providing the supports that they need to be there. And lastly, the full-service community school model. Abdul and Maria have hit that hard. I'm not going to get too far into it. But we simply need to have more schools that are serving as a hub to meet the needs of not only the students, but the families in the community. We've got full-service community schools in Minnesota. I firmly believe every school should be a full-service community school, and we could talk more about that on a whole nother show. But these are the daily needs.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Scott on the line in St. Paul. Scott, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you very much. So, first of all, I want to speak from experience.
Okay.
I was in one of the very first high school shootings in the country. The student came in, shot the teacher, shot the student next to me, and shot another one on the way out. So I'm speaking from experience, not from conjecture or how people might feel. If we want to end the active shooter in a school, there is one way to do it for every single school across the country. We've put double doors to get into a high school because our shooter went in an open door, went out an open door. You need to have a school completely locked down. One entrance in, one entrance out for the beginning and the end of the school day. A armed guard at the door so you get released into the first section, and then after that door closes behind you, and you get into the next section when the school closes. Because the active shooter normally is already in the school. He's been there for going to school, and all of a sudden one day he's going to come in and he's going to do what he does.
Scott,
now, we can talk about safety in schools. You know, the educators in this country are underpaid and overworked.
All right, Scott, thanks. I appreciate your contribution. I want to get Maria, your response to what Scott was suggesting.
I mean, that's definitely a good idea. And I know that there are some schools that are like that. And then there's definitely schools that need to make improvements. I know that there was a lot of levies this past voting this last November where a lot of districts passed where they can improve their building. But I also think back to Sandy Hook with the first grade classroom where it was a well-known gentleman to the school who was the son of
a teacher.
One of the teachers, yeah. And was not questioned and probably went through the protocol, went in through, signed in, and was not questioned. You know, so I think that there's so many different scenarios that we need to really pay attention to, because it could be a student that we know and love and not suspect.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that as much as we can do to be proactive, we still have that issue where it could still happen. And it's not just in schools. I think about just going into the mall and not having to be concerned with that, going into a movie theater. I'm sure that in Las Vegas, people were just wanting to enjoy a concert and not necessarily think about what's going to happen and where is the shooter coming from.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Peter on the line in Mankato. Peter, welcome to the conversation. Peter, are you there? Oh, I think we've lost Peter. Oh, well. I'm curious in terms of, because there are, well, what our last caller described in terms of that those doors and lockdown during the day, I couldn't help but think of what you were saying, Abdul, earlier about do we need to create schools that look like prisons in order for students to be safe? And does that setup in some ways perpetuate that idea of creating a school that looks like a prison, that, you know, it's there's no perforation to the outside. It's all locked down until the end of the day.
How controlled is that? You know what I mean? Like, I went to a school in Chicago where you had to go through metal detectors. I was in elementary school, and like, it just sets the wrong tone from the beginning. Like, I feel like I'm going, you know, like I don't like that feeling. I don't even want to say what it makes me feel like where I'm going to, but it's not a good feeling. And then like to the caller, I feel so bad that he had to witness that and be a part of anything like that. And for the young people that were in his classroom, and that's just so sad to me. And at the same time, there's schools that can't afford that. Mm-hmm. Like you got some schools whose cafeteria is a classroom. Or whose cafeteria doubles as their gym. So for us to think that, you know, let's just next year implement policies where every school has to create a budget where they have these certain systems, ideally that's perfect and in a great world. But like Maria said, it wouldn't prevent it all. And we just don't have the resources to support that. What I do feel like we have the resources to support is a sense of belief that you belong. You know, I think that that's what's lacking. I think that's the conversation that we really, where this it becomes the next level platform, is we stop looking so much on the outside and we start looking internally. What's going on? Like, I can't control the NRA. I can sit here on this radio station. We could talk to the NRA. It seems like they're kind of set in what they want to do right now. But what we have an opportunity to do as teachers, in order to create safer schools, and as adults, and as people in general, what we have an opportunity to do is to give our best selves to each other, to give each other the type of energy that we deserve, to be as loving as we can possibly be, to see every young person the way they deserve to be seen, and to give what they deserve to have. And I think the more we do that, the more we, is the proper term, mitigate, we mitigate these types of scenarios to the best of our ability, because I believe the shooter, what was he? He was adopted. One, I'm not giving empathy, so please don't. I'm just trying to state facts. I think he was adopted. The people who adopted him they died, and so it was just kind of him. Like, regardless of how I feel about him, regardless how I feel about any shooter or anybody that harms anybody else, nobody deserves to be alone in this world. Mm-hmm. And we have to create, and when you come to school, that's like a safe space for a lot of people. Even though, like, this conversation is changing, how do we make school safe? I want to state this right now. schools are safe. Like, this isn't happening in every school every single day. And I don't want the narrative about our schools to kind of be dictated by these events. You know what I mean?
There's less than 1% of schools.
Exactly. Yeah, so when we think about our schools, we got to think about these homeless babies who don't have anything going on at home that come into a school building in whatever community, and they have adults and other classmates who genuinely care about them and want to know how their spring break is going or what they're going to do, or give them different avenues and say, I believe in you. See, like, that's that we need more of what teachers are doing.
Building empathy.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest challenge, because if we're faced with so many different things, teachers and really everybody at the school building does not have that opportunity to do that. So, and I'm just going to tell a story that I've heard from a young lady who said that, you know, she got there late to school because she has to get herself up. She missed the bus, so then she had to walk to school and then was faced of needing to go through a metal detector, take everything off, and then couldn't even get to class. And then that was her welcome to school. And just think about how welcoming that is, and for all that this young lady needed to face. And let's just say that, you know, the gentleman that was the shooter, what kind of, like, what was missed that we could have easily taken care of at school? Or, again, within the community, what could we have done to try to prevent that in a way where he felt love, he felt welcome? And that we were able to meet those needs. Because I can't imagine that somebody who had their needs met would go out and do something like that. When you're happy, you know, that's not the first thing that's on your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, there was something that was clearly wrong and was lost in this young man's life.
We have just 2 minutes left here.
Can I say something?
It's less than two minutes. Yeah.
I think that if my final thing I want to say to anybody out there, whoever you are and everybody in this room, the thing that you can do to prevent and continue to create safe spaces, safe schools, safe communities, is do what you do to the best of your ability. If you are a radio personality, do that to the best of your ability with a strong moral compass. If you are a police officer, do that to the best of your ability with a strong moral compass. If you are a lobbyist, if you are a politician, if you are an educator, if you are a community service member, if you are a business leader, do your job to the best of your ability with the one thing in mind being, I need to always be a part of creating better communities going forward for the young people, because that's what they deserve.
Well, and that's what the students are doing the best right now. And I would highly agree with that. I mean, that's what we teach our students every day, is to come and be your best self.
Right.
You know, and I think that the rest of the nation needs to wake up and start being their best selves, because the students are doing it for us. And we should be right along with them, if not doing it for them.
Denise Speck, anything you want to add to that?
I don't think I can say it any better than Maria and Abdul.
All right. Thank you to all of you so much for being a part of this conversation. We've had just a fabulous hour. There's been so much that we didn't even get to, because there's so much to talk about. And so I hope that maybe we can have you back someday to talk about things in a little bit further detail. But thank you to all three of you. I've been talking with Abdul Wright. He teaches eighth grade. He's a language arts teacher at Best Academy, and he was Teacher of the Year in 2016. Thanks, Abdul.
Thank you.
And we've been talking to Maria Lay. She's a third grade teacher in Roseville. Maria, thanks so much for joining our conversation this hour.
Thanks.
And we've been talking
us.
To Denise Speck. She's the president of Education Minnesota. That's a teachers union here in Minnesota. Denise, thanks so much for being a part of this conversation this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Marianne Combs. I hope you'll join the conversation tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about retaining people of color on staff. What does it take to retain talent? There's been a big push to hire people of color, but they're finding that organizations are not doing a very good job of retaining them. What's missing from that equation? We're going to look deeply at that tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, you're going to hear from some youth who are going to be presenting their poetry. These are finalists for a National Poetry Slam team. They'll be joining us on Wednesday. Stay tuned for that at 11 o'clock.